What's up, Aggie Radio? Welcome to Overcompetitive Bystanders, our weekly show talking about sports.
We're overcompetitive and we're bystanders.
Yeah, it's really all we do. We just get really competitive about stuff.
It's kind of like an armchair quarterback. I mean, you're like, oh, I totally would have done that better. Like couch coach or whatever.
Yeah, that's really all we can do is just say what we think should happen, but yeah.
And don't get us wrong. We're pretty smart. We know what we're talking about.
For the most part, anyways.
Somewhat.
All right, so for the first, we're going to talk about the saddest city in the nation right now. Now that the Cleveland has won their championship, who do we think is the new, like, saddest city?
In sports.
In sports.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, not just saddest overall, just in sports.
Yeah, because, I mean,
we're not going to touch that.
There's a lot of different stuff that can go on. But I think we'll have Alex start. We've talked about a couple of cities before. So we'll see what Alex thinks is the saddest city in sports right now.
All right. So I looked at a few. Minnesota's pretty sad right now. But I ultimately settled on Philadelphia because I just wouldn't want to be a Philadelphia fan right now. I think it's really hard to be a Philadelphia fan right now. The Eagles, so much hype last season before, and then just not a great season. Philadelphia 76ers, terrible season.
Terrible decade, I feel.
Terrible decade. They're the number two and number three worst, like, overall season, and both of those have been set in the past 10 years. So
it's not like in the last 3 years they did that.
Well, I mean, the past 3 years have been terrible. Yeah. So
the last 2 years, I feel like, are the worst two in the history of the NBA or something.
Well, yeah,
they're pretty awful.
The only team to do worse is the Charlotte Bobcats, but that was in the lockout season, so they played 20 less games. So given those 20 more games, they could have easily, you know, surpassed them. And
but was it percentage or was it just overall
wins?
Was
it was both percentage and overall wins.
Overall.
Okay. So maybe they would have figured it out after the birds.
So Philadelphia is in no way the saddest city in sports. Like, I can't even comprehend that that's what you're thinking of, because first of all, it's been since 2011, that was around the last time that the Sixers missed the playoffs. So it hasn't even been that long since the Sixers have been a playoff team. It's been about 5 years.
No. They had one playoff season, and they had terrible seasons before that.
Okay. So that's part of it. The other thing is, they did make the NBA Finals in 2001. That's not distant memory. I mean, that's 15 years ago. They've had okay seasons here and there. They've had mixed in stuff. It really has been the last 5 years that they've tanked, and that's actually been their strategy.
Yeah, I mean, but even, like, you can't really make the comparison right there, them making it to the finals as them being the saddest city, because, like, the whole thing with Cleveland being the saddest city in sports is that they would make it to championships, but they would never win. Well, for the Cavs recently, anyway. Okay. They made it to the finals with LeBron once and got swept by the Spurs. And they had a hard time getting back. And then last year they went to the finals, but they lost. But they were still the saddest city in sports. And then they finally won. So now that burden's kind of been lifted. So it's not so much about them getting to the championship. It's just more of them winning one.
I feel like it has a lot to do with how good it is to be a fan.
Yeah.
Part of the thing about Cleveland is the Browns were bad. The Cavs were bad and if they didn't have LeBron. And the Indians weren't any good. And so no matter where you turned in Cleveland, you didn't have a bright spot. Philadelphia's had plenty of bright spots recently.
Yeah, for sure.
I think you look at it, we'll even look at this year. Villanova, a team in Philadelphia, a college basketball team, won the national championship this year. So, I mean, just from there, they've started. Temple had a great football season this last year. The Phillies have been the last two seasons they've taken a step down, but from 2006 to 2011, the Phillies won their division. From 2001 to 2004, the Eagles won their division and were either in the conference championship or the Super Bowl of each year. The Phillies won a Super Bowl in like 2008, or
they
sorry,
won a Super
not,
Bowl.
The
wow.
Phillies won the World Series in 2008.
They also were the first baseball team to ever win a Super Bowl.
Shame.
Yeah.
Shame.
All four major teams in Philadelphia have played in a championship since 2000. all of them have won at least one championship since 1960. Now, most of them have won multiple. The teams in Philadelphia have – the majority have won 2 to 3, the fifth exclusion being the Philadelphia soccer team, the Union, because – I mean, it's a new team. They've got like 4 years under their belt. But they made the U.S. Open Cup in the final in 2014 and 2015. Now, as a sports fan, I don't feel like there's anything there that you look at and go, man, it's so tough to be a sports fan in Philadelphia.
Right now. I'm not saying, was it hard to be a Philly fan 15 years ago? Probably not. You had the Eagles on the rise.
But that's the thing is, like, you got to look at the long term when you're saying, like, is the saddest city in sports. I mean, you could say they have the saddest teams at this moment, but I don't think you can give them the saddest city in sports if they've had success recently.
Well, that's how the way I was looking at it is, I understand that, like, the usual way of looking at it is, have you won a championship recently? But right now, if I had to pick the city I would not want to be in to be a fan right now, Philly is my number one.
But I mean, the thing about it is they have a lot of teams that they can go to.
That's the thing.
Yeah, but you have to be a fan of
those. It's one of 12 cities in the U.S. that has all four major sports. It's also one of 9 cities that has all four plus soccer. It's also one of only 3 cities in the U.S. that has all 4 major sports within its own city limits. Most of them, you have a drive out to get to the stadium. It's right there, and you can get to anywhere. I think as a fan, even if you're going to a mediocre game, you can go to any game.
You're
going
to be happy to go to 76ers game right now?
I said mediocre, not terrible.
I don't think it would have been fun to be an Eagles fan last year, because it's like the Rams. At the beginning of the season, you're super hyped. You just got a new quarterback. Your team's looking good. And all of a sudden, they go 7-9.
7-9 is pretty mediocre.
And didn't deserve 7-9. They looked much worse than that.
They didn't even earn that subpar record that they got.
Exactly.
No, I'm trying to think of what I would think would be the saddest city in sports. And, you know, if it weren't for the recent success in – like for the Giants, you could almost say New York, because the Knicks are always terrible, the Nets are always terrible, the Jets are always terrible, and the Giants are always like mediocre, and somehow they managed to get those 2 wins against vastly superior teams in the Patriots, true, which I was totally happy about, because I do not like the Patriots at all. They're probably the biggest rivals of the Broncos, which is my team, even though they're not in the same division. Everyone
hates
them.
Every country hates the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, part of it's because they're good, and part of it is because there's been so much shady stuff going on around them. But not really going to dive into that right now.
So
we could talk about it. But
yeah, let's talk hours about
the saddest city in sports right now is definitely Atlanta.
Atlanta
hasn't done anything for a while. But the last thing you've really seen from Atlanta championship-wise, in 99, the Falcons lost in the Super Bowl.
To the Broncos.
The Broncos, yeah. In 95, the Braves did win the World Series. But like you said, it's not entirely on, what's happening right now. That was 20 years ago. Most, the young Braves fans don't remember it. Yeah, they hear the stories, but it's kind of like for a lot of people, it doesn't carry any weight with them.
Wait, then why is it relevant that the Phillies won? I mean, not 2008, but before that, the nearest championship was in like 78. But it's so great to be a Philly fan. But 20 years ago doesn't matter. But the 50-year-old,
because they've had success recently, they've made it to the World Series, they've won their division, and I mean, they've won their league a lot recently. It's been a great thing for the Phillies, I think.
Yeah, I mean, other than these last couple of years, the Phillies have been one of the top teams. And I would argue the same thing for the Atlanta Braves. They've been, like, one of the teams to beat for years and years and years. They've obviously stepped down recently. But I think – I don't agree with you either, because I feel like they have had success recently. But as far as the Hawks go, I mean – and part of it, I think, is the fault of the fans, because the Hawks never can get enough people to fill up their stadium.
Maybe Dwight Howard will be the thing. But look at the Hawks. They have more wins last season than the 76ers have in the past 3.
Now,
well, I mean, that's true with almost everybody.
Right. Yeah. But I mean,
but then at the same
time,
we're
just comparing these 2 cities.
But yeah, if you look at it this way, though, I mean, you could make the case for the Lakers. I mean, are you really going to say the Lakers are the saddest team in sports because they've had 2 or 3 rough years?
Yeah.
You can't. They've had so much success that you can't ignore.
Well, they still have the Clippers in LA,
and I mean,
too. They do, but they've never won anything. They've been constantly terrible. They're better right now.
They can't
but,
get out of the second round of the playoffs.
I mean, they limp into the playoffs, so I mean, it's not really a surprise. And but,
I mean, as a sports fan, just in general, in Philadelphia, there's 9 NCAA schools that field multiple teams. There's always going to be a game you can go to.
Yeah, but like how many of those are actually going to be fans of? Usually one.
Well, I'm just saying in general as a sports fan, it's a nice place to go. I got to say, sitting here in Utah with the Jazz and Real Salt Lake and, you know, having Utah State here, there's not that much happening. In Philadelphia, imagine all of the games going on. It'd be a great place to be.
Yeah, and they're at least having marginal success or whatever. So, I mean, it's not like they're constantly just, you know, the beating, like the punching bag of everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, you could make the argument that maybe Salt Lake is the saddest city because the Jazz have never won a championship. But then at the same time, Real Salt Lake won a national championship a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So it kind of takes that out of the equation because, you know, when you have two teams and one of them wins a championship in the last, like, 10 years, I mean, you can't really say that you're the saddest team, even though most people probably don't even know that Real Salt Lake won the national championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one of the things is, as a sports fan, one of the games, college football-wise, that I would love to go to is Army versus Navy. Guess what city is the most frequent host to the Army versus Navy football game?
Probably not Atlanta.
It's Philadelphia.
Probably not Atlanta.
That's a great game to go to. I mean, yeah, maybe it's not the national championship, but it's a historic game. It's a fun one to go to. I think there's a lot of stuff going on in Philadelphia. Obviously, it's not the best city in the world sports-wise. They've been lacking recently, but it's not the worst, that's for sure.
I've got an idea for who I think is the saddest city in sports. And this is one I just barely thought about, so I don't have really like a lot of information on some of the other teams. And there's only a couple there anyway, but the Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
I mean, when your team makes it to the Super Bowl 4 times in a row and comes up short every single time, how depressing is that?
And then it's mediocre for basically
the last 5. Yeah, and then since then, they've been pretty mediocre to terrible.
They're coming back this last year, and this year I think they'll actually be a dominating force in the NFL. But
I don't think they'll be a dominating force. They might compete a little bit better.
They have a great defense, and their offense is getting there.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to be a dominant.
Yeah, sorry.
But they could be decent next year. It's really funny because he's not there right now, but one of my coworkers during the football season at Jimmy John's, he was a Buffalo Bills fan, and I'd always give him crap about it. He's like, your team is terrible. But then you have the Sabres. I don't know how the Sabres have done in hockey. I can't think of any time that I've heard of them winning anything.
They haven't done anything recently.
And I don't know if they have another team in there, but mostly just like the Bills because like, and even they're like, thoughts that they might be going to like Toronto or whatever because you know they're not getting a ton of support and they were talking about moving. I don't know if they're still thinking about it, but they play some like a couple of games a year in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that's got to be sad to be a Buffalo Bills fan and to be in Buffalo because like the main show in town is just almost always terrible. So I mean that's a possibility. Another one that I thought about was like Phoenix/Glendale in Arizona. Because the Falcons haven't ever won. They had that heartbreaking loss to the Steelers in the Super Bowl.
Wait, when did the Falcons go to Arizona?
The Falcons?
Yeah. You said the Falcons, not the Cardinals.
I said the Falcons?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, I meant Cardinals. Cardinals.
So wait.
But Atlanta.
He misspeaks and it means
you could have said shame.
I misspeak.
You can say shame.
Absolutely. Oh, shame.
Yeah, yeah. Shame, it's just shame. Like from Game of Thrones when they had the Walk of Shame and shame and ding, ding, ding.
Okay.
Shame. Shame. But yeah, so the Cardinals had a heartbreaking loss against the Steelers in the Super Bowl. The Diamondbacks are terrible all the time. The Coyotes, yeah, let's not talk about them. They're pretty useless.
The Suns haven't done anything for
a while. I don't even know when they've won a championship. If they did, it was a long time ago. Did he win a championship?
I didn't think he ever won a championship.
They
haven't been good since Steve Nash, let alone like a championship level team.
Yeah, I mean they got pretty good for like a year under Jeff Hornacek, but other than that, they've been awful. So I mean, that's another place. That's just like, could that be the saddest city in sports?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. There's so many different cities that have had so many struggles. So feel free to tweet to us at, what's our Twitter handle?
Oh my gosh. Competitive USU.
Competitive USU. Feel free to tweet to us and let us know which city you think is the saddest city in sports and why.
Another one.
You can also text in. Our number is 435-797-2346. Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So text in to us. We'll be able to see it if we wake up the computer screen. But yeah, and we'll be able to give feedback on people with their ideas about what's, you know, what's the saddest city in sports.
Okay. The next thing we want to talk about, we covered it quite a bit last week, but it's kind of the NBA free agency. We're not going to talk about, you know, Durant. That's been over-talked, and it's been covered by anybody and everybody. We want to kind of talk a little bit about some of the other deals. What I first of all kind of want to go over is just, I mean, the fact that I feel like some of the teams are really losing that depth, and a lot of other teams are really gaining a lot of depth. I think we'll talk about this more. I think the Jazz have done a great job of adding depth.
Yeah.
I think their second rotation is awesome. I think Golden State has taken away their depth. I think they've chosen for one big contract instead of a general quality on their second line. And I think as a team that's going to be using that second line a lot, because they're going to be up by a lot and they're going to kind of be milking it, they're hoping that helps them progress. Don't think that's going to help it later in the playoffs.
Is that a big deal, though, when your second line only is really coming in full force when you're up that much?
Well, I mean, even as it is, I mean, this is – I talked about this the other day on one of my other shows, is that, you know, with that, I mean, yeah, they're losing some key players that were on their bench or whatever because they can't afford to pay them anymore because they signed Durant. But at the same time, they're not just going to – you know, throw the second group of five out there and say, all right, good luck for a few minutes. They'll stagger their substitutions. So you'll still have probably at least two of their big four that they've got in at the game at all times, like other than when they're up by 30 at the end of a game or when they're up by 65 against the Sixers. but, yes, yeah, so, I mean, they're going to stagger it. I could be lowballing that number for sure. But yes, I mean, they're going to stagger it, so it's not really going to be a huge deal for them, I don't think. But it could come into play in the playoffs for sure. And I think that, you know, despite how good they're going to be, I still think that they're not necessarily going to be, you know, as dominant as people think they will be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, and I can't remember how much we discussed this last week, but I think the fact that the Warriors have lost a lot of that size that Andrew Bogut gave them is critical. Because Andrew Bogut was really their only big man. He went down in game five, or was it game four? Either way, they were up 3-1, looking really good. Andrew Bogut goes down, they lose the series. I think that's because Cleveland was much more physical.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of it.
I think having the pick, the free agent that they got, he who shall not be named, that doesn't help what they're looking for.
I mean,
it helps what they want. I don't think it'll help them in that championship after, you know, basically 100 games. I think they're going to be tired. I think they're going to be beat. I think that physicality is really going to knock them out.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that was, I believe, the reason why both sides went for that deal. Because, obviously, the Warriors did really well without Durant. And Durant, you know, he could have gone a lot of other places and done fine, but I think that they felt like they had to join forces to beat LeBron and to beat the Cavs because LeBron was just so dominant in that series that they're like, oh, we have to get another piece. We have to get Kevin Durant if we want to beat LeBron. And I mean, for me, it takes away their depth. And if you look at the Spurs for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. they've always been successful. And why have they been successful? Because they always have a good depth. They've always got a good bench. You know, they don't have, you know, a LeBron James or a Kevin Durant that can go out and take over a game every night. But, I mean, they have players that can step up for sure, but they don't have anyone that's at that level. But they always have that depth that really helps them and always makes them a contender no matter, you know, what happens during the offseason. They're always finding guys to solidify their bench and to solidify their depth.
Yeah.
And so I think that, I mean, I agree with you. I think that it's not going to be as beneficial for the Warriors in the long run as they think it's going to be and as everyone thinks it's going to be. Sure, during the regular season, they're going to just roll through most people and probably get up near their win total from last year, maybe pass it. I mean, it's hard enough to get to that level, but no, it is possible that they could pass it. But I do agree. I think that they're going to be exhausted when they get to the playoffs, and their depth is, or their lack of depth is really going to show. And they're going to, you know, reconsider that whole idea. And I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if Kevin Durant bolts after 1 year.
Yeah. I mean, that's why he did the player option.
Yeah. I mean, that, and also because he could make more money next year.
Exactly. But I would really like him to see him leave and go to Boston or any other team, honestly. But we've talked about that too much.
All right. So one of the other big deals, we talked about it, some of the rumors last week, but ended up falling through differently. Dwayne Wade ended up leaving Miami, going home to Chicago. I don't think it's going to work out. I don't think Chicago's going to do – I mean, they'll be okay. They won't be a bad team. But they're not going to be – the number two in the East. I don't see them being competitors. They're going to be a team that can put up a good game. Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade are terrible three-point shooters.
Yeah, and Jimmy Butler's not great either.
And this is a league that is moving more and more towards three-point shooting. When this team goes up against the Warriors, I expect them to lose every matchup against the Warriors this season. I mean, they're not going to compete.
How many other teams are you going to say that for? There's about at least 10, 15 where you say they're not going to be competitive against the Warriors.
Yeah. And I.
But here's the thing. I mean, and so, yeah, I don't think that Dwayne Wade is going to stay there long term. I think he gets traded at the trade deadline to the Cavs, because the Cavs can send future picks to the Bulls. And I think that was the whole plan all along, is like the Cavs don't have the money to sign him right now. Okay. They don't. But the Bulls did. And I think going in, you know, Dwayne was talking to the Bulls and be like, hey, you know, I mean, I want to, like, try this and see how it works, but if it doesn't work out, you can probably ship me to the Cavs for a couple first-round picks, future first-round picks, because he's playing the same position as Jimmy Butler, their best player, so you're going to bump Jimmy Butler to a three because Dwayne Wade's too small to play a three. And so, I mean, if things go really well for some reason and they're playing well, I don't see he's going to get bolted. He's going to get bumped over to Cleveland, but I mean, I'm with you. I see that that's not going to happen. Like, they're not going to have, like, just unbelievable success. And so they're going to trade him, get some future assets, and, you know, Dwayne Wade gets to go play with, you know, LeBron James again and possibly win another championship.
Yeah,
he's very sharp. And then they get trade exception as well. So, I mean, it works out for both sides in that case, because the Bulls aren't going to compete with the Cavs, not with the roster that they have. They know that. They can get the future stuff, so that's how I see it.
What other big trades are we looking at? I mean, Mike Conley, max deal for the Grizzlies. How do you think that's going to play out?
I think it's overpaying for a decent player. I don't think Mike Conley's bad, but I just don't think that that type of deal is going down. But that's what everyone is doing right now. Yeah. Everyone's overpaying. I mean, if you look at... I'm trying to think of who it was. Mozgov.
Mozgov.
Extremely overpaid.
$18 million a year, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I mean,
for Timofey Mozgov. I mean, who couldn't get off the bench in the finals?
Yeah. I mean, he's essentially a big guy. That's really all I see him as. A large person that can stand there and be a center. He's not adding any skill or depth. What's actually ironic is I actually feel like he might even be a good fit for what could help the Warriors. For being a big physical player.
For being an $18 million brick to just sit on the court.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't want to pay him $18 million, but he'd be a big player. I mean, he'd be physical. That's what they need.
Yeah. I mean, I think he'll do an okay job. Not worth that much money.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of how the story has been this offseason, is that people are way overpaying for players.
Oh, yeah. Like Joakim Noah, 4 years, $70 million.
Yeah. Ian Mahinmi. $16 million a year. Yeah, I mean, are you kidding me? And, I mean, that's the sad thing about it, is like, you know, some of these teams, they're afraid to come up empty, and so they'll overpay for players. And that's the thing with the Lakers. They way overpaid for Timofey Mozgov. They way overpaid for Luol Deng. But they were worried about coming away empty. Yeah. And they're trying to get at least marginally better. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's not really worth it.
Yeah, one thing I think is interesting is kind of how this compares to NFL contracts. It's just the guaranteed money that these NBA players get. It's insane. NFL contracts are much more based around performance, and that's good. I feel like that's how it should be here. It should be very much, all right, here's how much you make if you make the All-Star game. Here's how much you make if you lead the team in points, if you take us to this round of the playoffs. I mean, it should be a set number of things that if you do this, then you get that $18 million. If you underperform, okay, you get $8 million, $10 million, depending on what the contract's laid out as. I just don't feel like that guaranteed money should be this high. I understand. It shouldn't just sit with the owners.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous that all of this money is just being shipped out to players that, I mean, Joakim Noah, who sat on the bench the entire, like, the entirety of last season, didn't do much. Yeah. And, I mean, even when he played, he didn't do anything. I just feel like that type of money, just it's not where it needs to be.
I mean, yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's just ridiculous amount of money, but they got to do something with all the TV money that they got, and the collective bargaining agreement allows it so that players get paid more, which is fine. But, I mean, unfortunately, all these teams think that they need to, you know, just spend all this money. But then you have, like, other, you know, clubs where you didn't hear them making huge, you know, crazy deals. Like the Jazz. Jazz didn't make, like, any crazy, like, huge lump sum, like, deals. They did make some good deals.
Yeah.
But they didn't overpay for people.
Exactly. Yeah. The Jazz spent about $26 million in an off season where about $3 billion was dished out. Yeah. For a team that got a lot better, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want.
No, the Jazz handled this like champs.
Yeah, the biggest one that I see disputed is Gordon Hayward, and I don't think it should be disputed. I think he's earned that money. And
I mean, that was last year even.
Yeah. Right.
And even, like, you look at it now, I mean, what was his contract for, like 15 or 16 million as a max last year?
Yeah.
I mean, that's nothing this year.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they locked him into a long deal, which is great. So, I mean, they've got a lot of flexibility going forward. But, yeah, they signed a couple people that were really good. I mean, Joe Johnson is going to be a good player for them. I mean, he's not going to be like he was earlier in his career, but he's going to be able to go out there and, you know, take some end-of-game shots and hit some threes during the game and be a veteran presence.
Yeah.
And they really just got a ton better. And I think a lot of it is, I mean, that is how the Jazz have always been, about being frugal and not overspending. But then I think a lot of it also goes with Dennis Lindsay and his roots in the Spurs organization, mm-hmm. where they did the same thing. Like, they didn't spend a ton of money on people. I mean, they may have overpaid a little bit for Pau Gasol, but, I mean, he is instantly going in there and being a starter to replace Tim Duncan, who retired. And so, I mean, it's just, it's nice to see that not everyone was just dumb about their money. I mean, you're going to see, like, this is going to cripple some of these teams going forward, because they're not going to be able to get, you know, the better talent next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. I think the Jazz are doing great. The depth that they've added has been amazing. I really look at it, there's no real immediate need. We have somebody as a starter that we need as a starter, and we have a backup that will do great. I mean, I don't see anywhere where I look at it and I go, oh, man, like last year, where I looked at the Jazz and said, man, if we could just get a point guard. Right now I'm looking at him saying, man, I mean, there's just nothing.
If we could stay healthy.
I mean, we did have really seven point guards for a little bit there. I mean, they traded away Burke.
We still got six. So, I mean, if any NBA teams are listening out there and you want a point guard, we are willing to deal.
Well, we're assuming they're willing to deal. We don't really have any say in that, but we're assuming that they're okay with having a few less than six point guards.
I mean, if you're an NBA GM and you want to give me personally a phone call, I'm fine with that. I'll discuss trade options. give Dennis Lindsay a call, see if he answers. I can't guarantee it. See what we can do. But so now we're getting into our main topic of the week, our heat of the week. The point where me and Alex have strong differing opinions, and we're going along the same idea, the Utah Jazz. Last week, Bleacher Report came out with their top power rankings, and they put the Utah Jazz at number four, behind Golden State at one, Cleveland at two, the Spurs at three, the Jazz at four. I think this is awesome. I think the Jazz will end up right around there. As I mentioned last week, there's a huge opening. I think the Jazz have what they need to get into that three seed there in the West. There's not really anybody in the East. They've talked about how of Utah's players in immediate rotation, those 10 players, those first string and second string, only George Hill, who's 6'3", is smaller than 6'6". He's the shortest of those 10, and he's 6'3". But he's one of the best defensive point guards in the league, and he has a wingspan of someone who's 6 inches taller than him. The Jazz are big. The Jazz are quick. The Jazz are physical.
They have so much length.
I mean, I think this is a team that can shut down anyone.
Yeah, this is a scary team.
Yeah.
And I mean, the only thing that, like, is kind of, you know, the fallback is that they're really young.
And that's where I think the additions that they've made with Boris Diaw, with Joe Johnson, with George Hill, those are guys who have over 100 games of playoff experience. Guys who, I mean, Diaz won a championship. He was a key in a championship team. That's the leadership. Yeah. That's the veterans that we need. And, I mean, the Jazz last season were awesome. Even when, I mean, just when they were healthy. Obviously, when they had all of the health concerns, that's why they faltered. But as a healthy team, they were amazing. They took Golden State to the wire. They took San Antonio to the wire. They beat Cleveland. Here's a fact. LeBron hasn't won in Utah in the past 4 years. I don't think he's winning this year in Utah. I think this team's going to keep it going. This is a team that's strong, and I think they're going to keep winning.
That's the thing. Is like, I mean, I think a lot of people really underestimate the Jazz, but they have so much talent at every position. Like you were saying, there's not really any spot where we just have this gaping need. I mean, Gobert is one of the top centers in the NBA. Definitely defensively, I'd probably say he is the top center in the NBA. I mean, he can do all right on offense as well. And then you got Favors down there with him on defense. I mean, those guys are tough to, you know, you're not going to get great penetration easy layups against those guys. And then you got Hayward, who's good on both sides of the ball. I mean, he's not one of those players that'll just, like, wow you all the time, but he does solid stuff all the time. And he's just good at everything. I wouldn't say that he's great at too many things, but he's very good at like almost everything. And then at the two guard, you've got a couple guys who are going to be going in and out, and you got Hood and Burke. Like, they're both going to be, or Burks, sorry, Hood and Burks, they're going to be able to go in there and knock down threes, get some penetration and all that. And a point guard, you got the guys, I mean, you're talking about Joe Johnson are also going to be in there. I mean, there's just so many weapons on this team. And so I'm not at all surprised by that ranking. I wouldn't have expected it to be quite that high. Maybe, you know, a few spots lower. But, like, even as it is, I wouldn't be surprised if that's, you know, if they are that good.
Right. And that's where I'm at, too. I'm not surprised to see them at fourth. I don't think it's a terrible thing to put them at fourth. However, I don't think we'll end the season at fourth. I think we'll have some injury issues that we had to deal with last year as well. I mean, at one point we had Exum, Gobert, and Burks out.
Mm-hmm. That was for a while, too.
And for a
while.
And
Favors as well was out for a long time.
Yeah, and Favors had back issues all year. George Hill missed 28 games 2 years ago, so there's always a chance he gets injured. Mm. And I think when we did make, like, a few big moves. Like, yeah, we didn't pay a lot of money for him, but adding George Hill, Joe Johnson, and Boris Diaw, I think it's going to take a little bit more than a preseason to mesh to become this number four team. When all of these other teams that, like, were already competing are really only adding one big player that's used to, like, going to different teams.
But, I mean, that's the thing. They still have so many guys coming back that you're, like, you're inserting these guys. And the thing about it is, both with George Hill and Boris Diaw, they're coming into a similar system than what they were already playing, because, you know, the Jazz system is kind of based off of what the Spurs did. Boris Diaw just came from the Spurs. George Hill played for the Spurs a few years ago. He was part of the trade. Yeah, he was drafted by the Spurs. He was with them until they traded him to Indiana in order to get that pick that they used to pick Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, those guys are already ready to go on that. Joe Johnson. I don't think he was in Atlanta when they were running that same system, but like he's a veteran guy. He's going to be able to figure it out.
And in all reality, they're really only adding I'd call him a part-time starter.
Yeah.
George Hill isn't the one who's supposed to be the starter day in, day out until the end of the season. It's going to be Exum. They're hoping for Exum soon. Now, yeah, day one, Hill is probably the starter. But as it goes on, he's the only real starter that they're adding in. Everyone else is those key players. It's not like we're completely revamping our starting five.
Yeah.
And, I mean, our starting five, our starting four essentially stayed the same last year.
Except for when they were injured.
Except for, well, with the point guard rotation. The idea was Hood, Hayward, Favors, and Gobert. Now, that combo only played together in 45 games. But it posted a net rating of plus 5 points per 100 possessions, regardless of who the point guard was. Now, that is sixth in the league, just with that. So they're saying, you know, put those four out there.
Yeah.
And whoever you want at point guard, and we're going to get the sixth best in the league. Now, we have George Hill, who will be in addition. Exum's coming back. That's not six.
Burks is coming back.
Burks is coming back. We have everything we need. This is a team that's going to be dangerous. This is a team that's going to go out to play. I think this is going to be a great year to be a Jazz fan.
Absolutely.
I think this is going to be awesome. I think we're going to make great runs in the playoffs. I think we're going to have some very exciting wins this season. I think those matchups against Golden State are going to be awesome. One thing that they talked about as I was reading on The Ringer, they said a team with that type of wingspan and that type of size where anyone can really go in any position is extremely difficult to plan for in a seven-game series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And even any time you play them, it's going to be tough because, I mean, it's hard to get any kind of penetration against that when they're, like, taking up that much space with their wingspans and with their size. And so, I mean, this team is going to keep doing what they've been doing the last couple of years and just be really good defensively. And the guys they added are going to be able to come in and bring them instant offense off the bench. I mean, like you were saying, I mean, the starting five is basically going to be the same. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Exum was gone last year, but he's going to be in there. George Hill's going to be in there. Coming off the bench, you got Diao and Johnson. So they're not really taking much of a step back when they go to their bench either. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of depth on this team, and that's really where you're going to, you know, it's going to be really important at the late in the year. And as long as this team can stay healthy, they're going to be really tough to beat. Last year, if they had been able to stay healthy, you know, they would for sure have made it to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. They would have probably been.
And I think one of the keys is the defensive focus. Teams who can play defense do great on the road. I mean, it's a lot tougher to put on a great show and just be shooting the lights out if you're, you know, on the road. But if your job is to just slow down the other guy, it's a lot easier to keep up.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to slow him down before they get going than to try and get going. That's why I think the Jazz will have a lot of great wins. They'll play great on the road. They'll play great at home, and they're going to go out and they're going to have a great season. I'm making the prediction they're going to beat Golden State at least once this regular season.
Yeah,
I think it's fair. I don't.
How many times are they playing them? Are they playing three or four?
I haven't seen the schedule. I imagine the schedule's already out.
I say if they play them four times, they're going to beat them twice.
I think that's fair.
And if they play them three times, it depends on where they're playing.
The second home,
or at least one for sure.
Home, yeah.
Whoever gets the second home, I think wins that one.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it goes back to the depth, and you know, and that's a great point about the defense. You know, taking it with you on the road. The thing about it is they can set up their offense with their defense. They can get easy fast break points if they can take it away. I mean, for the Warriors, I mean, this is going to be a tough matchup for them because they have the length to match up with them. Like, when you have Dante Exum, like, who one of his, like, the greatest things, like, he hasn't done much on offense. He didn't his rookie year. He didn't play last year. But during his rookie year, he was good on defense, and that's why he won the starting spot. He didn't do much on offense, but he had the defense. And so he's going to be able to stay, like, in front of Steph Curry and make it a lot harder for him to score. And with his length, like
he's
3 inches taller than Steph Curry. Yeah. And he just, like, put his hands up. Like, it's going to make it a tough first shot for Steph Curry. Yeah. He'll still make some, but he won't be as accurate.
Yeah, Steph can't play when it's physical. He gets flustered. He can't do anything. And that's exactly what the Jazz are going to do.
And that's what the Cavs did in the finals. Yeah. Like, in those last three games, like, Golden State was just on the ropes the whole time because they were flustered because of the defense, because the Cavs played good defense.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
In the end, that caused Golden State to have issues.
Okay, but put Exum in at starting five. How many playoff games do you have between the five of them? Between the starting five, most of them haven't played in a playoff.
They haven't played in a
playoff. But that's why you have those veteran guys, that they're going to help them out.
Right, but...
I'm not expecting them to win a championship.
Starting five probably less than 10? Close to 10 wins, probably, in the playoffs, to say that you think...
Well, none of them... Have any of them even been
in
the playoffs?
None of them have been in the playoffs.
None of them have been to the playoffs. Okay. At least not out of the starting five if we're saying Exum is in. The other guys, they haven't been to the playoffs yet. So, I mean, I'm not expecting them to go extremely deep in the playoffs just because the experience kind of wins out.
Yeah.
But on the other side of the coin, Boris Diaw has tons of experience in the playoffs. I mean, he's with the Spurs the last few years. Like we said, he won the championship. George Hill was in the playoffs many times with the Spurs. I think he even won a championship with him, if I remember right. But he made it to Indiana. He went to the playoffs even. I don't remember if he was there during one of the times that they won, but I feel like he was.
I think he was just in between them.
Yeah, I think
if I remember correctly, he was just a couple years off each way.
It could be. I mean, but either way, he has lots of playoff experience, and he learned a lot from the other guys around him who had won a championship.
Yeah,
at the very least.
Yeah. Well,
and then Joe Johnson has also got a lot of playoff experience.
Of course. I'm not saying that I think the Jazz aren't going to be great. I think they're going to be really good next year, and as a Jazz fan, I'm really excited. But I think without seeing them play one game, putting them in at fourth when the biggest things we've added are these defensive players, or not these, like their bench players that we're adding, I think that's a big jump. And the fact that we couldn't stay healthy last year, if that becomes a problem this year, we could be having issues.
Yeah. I mean, who do you put it for then? Who's your number four team that you think, you know, as of right now, I really honestly think is better than the Jazz?
I think Boston could be a huge fight for them. They were already a top 10 offense with a defensive-minded team. Adding Al Horford,
okay.
I think the Hawks could put it. I think Toronto in the regular season could be a top four team.
Okay.
They have the same problem as the Jazz, is they're not not the same problem. They're just not good in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like they have some experience, but they're just not great in the playoffs. In the regular season I could see Toronto.
I wouldn't go out east for the fourth one at all. I wouldn't go east.
Who are you gonna put in the West though?
If I was gonna do the West, I would go with the Clippers. Grizzlies. The Clippers still have a lot of talents. They still have Chris Paul. They've got lots of good players. I would put them ahead of anyone from the East as far as power rankings go. And beyond that, I wouldn't put Houston in because they're atrocious on defense.
Oh, and they lost Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
They're going to be worse next year.
Yeah. But James Harden is one of the greatest players ever. He's good on offense. But
he actually is one of the greatest players ever for turnovers.
You know,
setting records for most turnovers in a
takes
season.
A certain kind
it
of
is
skill.
A record.
I mean, for a record, he's getting up there and allowing your player to score, too. Or the most, like, half, like, just throwing your arm out for
while he plays defense. That the Matador defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Olé! Just let you run by. It's just so funny when he ends up on SportsCenter because he just, like, literally just watched this guy go by.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay, we're going to keep moving on. We did... hear back a little bit on Twitter about the saddest city or state. One of them we got back from @MikeyImaginary was New Jersey. They get no credit for hosting every home game for the Jets and the Giants, and they lost the Brooklyn Nets. It's really true. I mean, this New Jersey has nothing right now. I mean, yes, they have the stadium, but they don't even get credit for the team.
Do the Devils not get any, have the Devils
I guess
not
that's
done
true.
Anything?
I guess the Devils haven't done much.
I mean, is that like their only team right now? Yeah, I kind of feel like it is.
Yeah, there's nothing in baseball, there's nothing football, nothing basketball.
Yeah, I feel like most New Jerseys identify with the Jets, which is, even if you give them that team, it's just still sad.
But,
yeah.
I mean, either way, like, New Yorkers hate New Jersey people. Like, they always just, like, mock them. I mean, you watch How I Met Your Mother, and every time New Jersey comes up, they're all just, like, really disgusted by it.
You're from New Jersey?
Yeah. Like, they were on this, like, date thing where they were pretending to be, like, some hicks from the country. And then they find out the girls are from New Jersey. And he's like, okay, that is it. Like, I am not dating someone from New Jersey.
I agree. I think New Jersey's got
so it. I mean, Mikey could be right on that one because, yeah, they do host the Jets and the Giants. They don't get any credit. They lost the Nets, which, I mean, yeah, I mean, it does suck because they don't have that team anymore, but it's not like the Nets really ever did anything.
Yeah, it's been a while since they've done anything. I mean, they had Vince Carter for a little bit. I remember that.
Yeah, and Jason Kidd and Richard Jefferson.
Yeah, they put on a show
for a bit. And then they got beat by the Spurs.
Yeah, they put on a show for a bit. The next thing we kind of want to talk about is there's been a lot of talk recently about the NBA being rigged on if it's really decided by the games, on if the teams that are where they are is because of certain things with the NBA, with the reffing, with just different decisions. What's your thoughts on that?
So I don't think the NBA is rigged as bad as, you know, with the scandals in previous years where, like, referees were purposely throwing games because they were betting on them. But I do agree with, which is ironic, Tom Donaghy, that Draymond was suspended in Game 5 so they could extend that series, and that he wasn't suspended in the previous series because then the Thunder would for sure take in that series. And I think, for one, they definitely wanted to see the Warriors in that final so they could do this whole, oh, they're fighting for the record. But I think if, like, there wasn't any issues with the NBA, Draymond may not have been suspended after the first kick to the nuts, but at least on the second one, and definitely by the third one, he would have been suspended, and we wouldn't have seen the Warriors even in the championship.
Yeah, I don't think they – I think he should have been suspended. Like, that kick on – was it Bogut?
Adams.
No, it was Adams, yeah, sorry. Bogut's on his team. That would be really bad. Here, teammate, take this. But, yeah, with Adams, I mean, he was hitting him constantly. And then, like, he's like, oh, he was trying to defend himself, saying that he was flailing. It's like, oh, yeah, your flailing foot went up 4 feet to his junk. Like, well, what?
Even if that's your excuse, don't you think if you do it 3 times in a 7-game series that you should be suspended just so you quit that?
Like, yeah.
That's not an okay defense. Oh, well, it was an accident. Well, you hit him 3 times in the same.
Yeah, and who knows if this first assault time, maybe, that he just had. Yeah. Maybe the assault he just got charged with in Michigan. Maybe he was just walking and flailing and just happened to hit him in the face.
I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I mean, that's for sure what happened.
Yeah.
Now, it really bugged me how Draymond Green became a bit of a thug this year. I mean, he's talking crap on the, like, in press conferences and stuff, and talking crap on the other teams he was playing, saying that the Spurs didn't earn the victory that they had against them in the regular season. And then constantly, like, doing stuff like that where he was taking cheap shots at guys during games, and it's like, what are you doing, dude? Yeah. And then he gets arrested for assault, and it's like, yeah, I mean, we're really surprised by that.
Yeah, Draymond made it really hard to root for the Warriors this year.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, we bring up the idea of the NBA being rigged, and we instantly go in having it in favor of the Warriors, that the NBA was pushing for the Warriors. But yet, there was a certain tweet made by Steph Curry's wife, Aisha?
Aisha? I think it's Aisha.
Yeah. But either way, she was calling out the NBA for being rigged against the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, I think first off, I mean, if you're married to someone in a professional sport, you have to be careful about how you're representing, like, yourself, because it reflects on your spouse and also the team they're playing for. So before you go out and send something like that, say, hey, do you think, like, will you have a problem with me sending this? And it was funny that he made a joke about it, like, the press conference afterwards. Like, he's like, yeah, I need to turn off the Wi-Fi at my house or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if he had to sleep on the couch after that.
I mean, there's something to say that Draymond Green was finally suspended in Game 5 when they're up 3-1. That, honestly, with that and with Bogut going down, is the deciding point in the series. Mm-hmm. You could say if Draymond didn't go down there, maybe it ends in 5.
Yeah.
So it could be, but, I mean, if he should have been suspended before.
Right, yeah. Right.
And they wouldn't have been it there. I mean, you could make the argument. Some people, like, were – they saw this. Okay, so on the Facebook page for the NBA, they, like, put upcoming games. And before Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, they had put in, like, Cavs versus Warriors. Mm-hmm. like for the next thing, not Cavs versus Warriors or Thunder. Right. It just said Cavs versus Warriors, and people were freaking out about that. So I mean, I want to believe that there isn't any kind of, you know, a rigged system going on, but at the same time, like, I don't know.
See, my thought is, I mean, I think the NBA wants the money. I think they know, all right, hey, if this goes 7 games, that's more money for us. If this, you know, goes this way, yeah, they've already got a lot of the deals locked down, but that's more advertising. That's more, I mean, just the legacy of it is bigger if it goes 7 games than if it goes 5.
Yeah.
But again, the NBA can only be so rigged because the players still have to make shots.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the NBA can't sit there and be like, this is the team that will win for sure, because if Steph steps out there and can't make a shot, well, guess what? No matter what the NBA wants,
yeah,
that's not going to go down. They're not going to win.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, you know, maybe there's a part of me that thinks that they did have it rigged in favor of the Warriors adding to the legacy, and maybe the NBA wanted the Warriors to win that at the end of it, win Game 7, but the Warriors didn't want to win Game 7, apparently, and that's how it came down. And I think, yeah,
well, I mean, I think they wanted it, but they didn't want it as much as the Cavs did.
Yeah. I mean, when you can't make a shot in the last 5 minutes of Game 7 of the NBA Finals with the tie game, yeah, that's on you. You can't throw that on anybody else.
Yeah, but is it the Cavaliers wanted it more, or just LeBron James wanted it more?
Well, I mean, definitely LeBron. I mean, LeBron carried everyone on his back that series.
I think the Cleveland LeBron Jameses did a great job in those last 5 minutes.
The Cleveland LeBron Jameses.
They did look very impressive, yes.
I also don't believe that LeBron broke his wrist at the end of that game. I thought that was ridiculous. I think that was...
Broke his wrist.
Well, when he fell, he acted as... And apparently that's the story, is that he broke his wrist and then still made the clutch free throw afterwards. I don't think he made it. I mean, he made the shot. That's not what I'm debating.
Yeah.
I don't think he broke his wrist. I think he saw an opportunity to build his legacy. He saw the bloody sock story that he could have, that, oh, look, you know, Game 7, injured, close game, LeBron gets hurt, and he still finishes. He's so clutch.
Well, I mean, I hadn't heard that he, like, broke his arm or his wrist or whatever, but, I mean, he could have, like, tweaked it a little bit, and it probably was hurting. But, I mean, either way, you know, he made it. I don't think... I mean, it wasn't like he was supposedly played like half a game afterwards on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know that would have added anything anyway. Yeah. And it's not like his free throw is what won the game. It just helped, you know, keep the lead. But yeah, so I mean, that's just how I see it. But he definitely wanted that more than anybody.
Yeah.
Because when you lead in every category statistically, like per game on both teams... Yeah, obviously you want it more than anybody else.
Yeah, he earned that championship, that's for sure.
Definitely.
But I think we're getting to that point where we need to start wrapping up.
Yeah.
So if you enjoyed the show, make sure to follow us at CompetitiveUSU and tune in next week at Tuesday at 5.
Also, we'll have this. This will be up on the website in the next few minutes. I'll put it up. And so you can check it out again. You can download it. Just go to our website, radio.usu.edu, and it should be, like, right on the front. So,
yeah.
Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Let us know what you think is the saddest city in sports. I want to thank you guys for listening.
All right.